This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. This week on our Africa update, we're going to take a closer look at new U.S. sanctions against Zimbabwe, plus a rise in homelessness among white South Africans. For more, we've got Amira Wood. She's co-director of Foreign Policy and Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies. Hi, Amira.
Hey, Farai. Great to be with you.
Always. So we've been following this situation in Zimbabwe, and the situation includes a tainted election and economic collapse. Now the U.S. has imposed new sanctions, accusing President Robert Mugabe of heading an illegitimate government that sponsors violence. Last week, the president, President Bush, signed an executive order that adds new financial restrictions against individuals and organizations linked to Mugabe's government. So South Africa criticized those new sanctions, saying they could actually obstruct these power-sharing talks. What do you think?
Well, I think the international community has to use everything in its toolkit to kind of acknowledge what has happened in Zimbabwe and to put pressure for change. I mean, what has happened is just unacceptable. You have had not only the flawed elections of March 29th, but again, failed electoral process in June. And, you know, right now there is this critical period of negotiations, political negotiations that need real pressure and real support. So I think it is important that the international community does everything that it can to say it is time for a change in Zimbabwe. Clearly, South Africa has had a lot at stake. The quiet diplomacy that we talk about with Mbeki, the quiet diplomacy has, well, brought some results, but not the results needed. And I think the African Union, the Southern African Development Community, all have said that more is needed to bring really a chance for peace and also for justice in Zimbabwe. So now these talks are underway. The talks are meant to bring a power-sharing agreement, to bring some kind of a transitional process that will lead to a truly free and fair election. And I think right now the international community, under the leadership of the African Union, really, but with all of the international community engaged, has to do its part to say we are standing in solidarity with the Zimbabwean people because a new day is well overdue.
Well, speaking of a new day, there's the new dollar. We talked a bit about this earlier, the $100 billion Zimbabwean banknote. That is $100 billion. I could calculate how many zeros that is, but I don't have time to do that right now. But it's a lot of zeros. Some of them may get chopped off in a reevaluation of the currency devaluation. But will knocking zeros off the currency make any difference in what actually people live with?
You know, Farai, the issue here is people don't have food on the table to feed their kids. It's as simple as that. And until an economy can work for the Zimbabwean people to bring food on the table, to bring housing, to bring health care, you know, decent jobs. I mean, it cannot be adding zeros to the banknote that you can bring a type of livelihood for people. I think you see still Zimbabweans voting with their feet, going across the border to South Africa, to wherever they can, really, to kind of find a way to survive and to feed their children. So until you have a sustainable economy that works for the people, that brings decent jobs, that brings good wages, that actually helps people put food on the table, you know, adding zeros, no, that's not going to do it.
Let's turn to a story coming out of South Africa. The head of South Africa's governing African National Congress, Jacob Zuma, recently said he's, quote, shocked and embarrassed about white poverty in the country. He spoke after visiting a township where white families are living without running water or electricity. And people are much more used to seeing black, you know, the images of Soweto, et cetera, et cetera. Not that Soweto is all slums. I mean, parts of it are quite nice, but is it a wake-up call that there is this kind of deep white poverty in parts of South Africa?
Well, I think clearly there is poverty in South Africa. And, you know, you had this grand bargain in the 90s where, you know, the South African government made a deal with the World Bank, the IMF, all the international players, that they would keep business as usual in South Africa. And I think what you see now is a real clamoring from the bottom up of people saying, wait, that deal isn't working for us. Whether it is farmers or miners, you know, the laborers of South Africa are saying this is not working for us. And so I think as we go to this real political transition in South Africa with the changeover from Mbeki to a Zuma presidency, I think we are seeing these cleavages in especially the economic classes in South Africa standing up and saying, look, we need a different way as we move forward to a new political regime, a different way that works for the masses, works for the working class and the poor of South Africa in particular.
There's a group called Helping Hand, and it's a charity that says that the number of homeless white people has increased by 58% since 2002, and that there are more than 130,000 white South Africans who are homeless. The ANC certainly grew out of the liberation struggle of black Africans in South Africa. Do you think the ANC generally has a good reputation among the many, you know, many white South Africans are deep, deep, longtime supporters of the ANC, were before it was a recognized political party within South Africa. But are there racial tensions still between some white South Africans and the ANC over allocation of resources?
I mean, I think the tensions in the ANC are broader than race. They are class tensions within the ANC, really, and some of those overlay issues of race. But it is really a class struggle that's underway now as you go towards this political transition in South Africa. So I think clearly when you look at the lines of class, clearly the black South Africans and South Africans from communities of color have dominated the lower and working class. And there have also been some poor whites and, of course, colored and Indians who are as part of that poor and working class community. So I think what you see is a sense of pressure coming forward on the ANC, pressure to take a look at its commitments, you know, the longstanding commitments to the working class. Remember, ANC came to be, you know, as a result of this amalgam that brought, yes, it brought the communist union, it brought also the working class and especially the trade unions in South Africa. And so it is that trade union wing within South Africa across races that is saying we need a different way now.
Finally, let's turn to HIV. There's been a few new studies that have come out, one from Johns Hopkins that found that Africans and people of African descent could be up to 40% more likely to get HIV than people of other races. But there's also a new study from Bristol University in England about HIV and life expectancy. It's got some good news about that. So what's the significance of that study, specifically the one on life expectancy?
Well, this Lancet study, and we have to say this Bristol University Lancet has been extraordinary. They have put out incredible figures on Iraqis that have been killed during the war. And now they've come out with this extraordinary report on HIV/AIDS, essentially saying that the rate of those who have contracted the disease and you know, the rate of life expectancy is increasing. So I think that is good news, particularly in the HIV/AIDS awareness community, that the earlier people are actually tested and can get treatment, the better it is that they can have lives that are extended in terms of the quality of life and also the life expectancy. So that's all good news for I feel like the downside often with these great reports and the good news really is our community. Particularly the community here in America, African American, as well as Hispanic communities of color in general, are not really experiencing those same levels of life expectancy as others. And certainly on the other side of the Atlantic, in the African world, really both Africa and throughout the African world in Latin America as well, where you see really the impacts of these treatments that the problem is access to the treatment. And the more we have instances in which health infrastructure is actually hampered, you don't have the nurses, the doctors, the access to resources for healthcare that's needed to provide this life-saving treatment for people throughout the African world. And I think, you know, we have to both celebrate the results of this study and acknowledge where there's still lots of room to grow.
Well, Amira, thanks again.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Farai.
Amira Woods is co-director of Foreign Policy and Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies, and she joined us from her headquarters in Washington, D.C.